Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. And today is February the 11th, 2021, almost Valentine's Day here. So heading into spring, which is a good thing. And hope you're all doing well. And today we want to talk about imposter syndrome, part two. We talked about that some last week and what it is, and also wanted to talk about tips for overcoming that, and basically just fear of success, fear of failure, self-sabotage, lack of confidence, those kinds of issues that come up with athletes and with any performers. And so wanted to be able to talk about topics, you know, address different things, topics related to that, to give you a helpful evaluation process for your coaching, and for imposter syndrome and confidence issues, and then some advanced tools for coaching in that area, and just talk a review again of what is imposter syndrome and how athletes and other performers experience it, what problems it might lead to, and how does imposter syndrome affect performance, and what's I tell you my experience, and you can tell me yours as an athlete and as a coach, and if you can share, and then as a performing edge coach, how can you help your athletes to overcome this? That's the key thing here. And what can we learn from, you know, great athletes that encounter this imposter syndrome? Also, I just wanted to announce that, of course, our calls are always the second, fourth Thursday of each month. I've been doing these for almost 10 years now. And if you, the replays are always in the Performing Edge Coach area there that you can listen to, a wealth of information there. And then, so today's the 11th, so our next call would be the February 25th on that Thursday. If you want to put that on your calendar, we'll do our next call then. And you can always email me any questions you have, and I'm happy to answer those on our calls here. So also, I just want to mention something as a caution. There's an email going around, I forget, the company is called Voice America or something like that. I forget the exact name, but it's something like Voice America, and it's supposedly a radio show where they, I've gotten emails about that where they say they looked you up and that you're, you know, they want to highlight you on their radio show and give you all this exposure, but it's not a legitimate radio show at all, and they want to charge you a lot of money, I don't know, $5,000 or $10,000, some huge amount of money just to be on their show, and it doesn't really have that much reach. So I just wanted to warn people that it's to not fall for that scam. I think it's a real scam that they're just trying to take people's money and maybe do an interview, but you should never have to pay to be on to be interviewed on a radio show. Anything, there's plenty of radio shows out there that will interview you for free, kind of thing. You don't usually don't get paid for doing an interview, but you should not have to pay the company if they're making you pay them. Then there's something that's not a legitimate radio show. So I just wanted to warn against that there. And also I had other questions come in. I'll answer some after we talk about our topic here. But first, just wanted to just talk a little bit about imposter syndrome and what it is and what you could do about it and you know, confidence issues. And I know we have Dave on our call. Dave, were you mentioning, can you say what you just said about your athletes and their confidence, what you're seeing there? As an example?
Yeah, so I'm working with track athletes, a lot of younger guys, so like 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds, and just maybe it's due to COVID, but there's just a lack of confidence. And that confidence just kind of like leads them to maybe stand around a little bit and really require a lot more direction. right? Whereas, you know, I'm used to a more regimented piece, but just watching that, and then when you kind of get into it, you get a sense that they're just up in their head. And those, whatever the inner critic is or whatever's happening there, they're just not feeling confident. That was my, from two or three guys who were kind of acting the same way.
Yeah, and what have you done to help them with that, or have you been coaching them or through some of that?
Yeah, so essentially we've done a couple practices on the more formally, but I like to pull guys aside, kind of do some one-on-one individual work, kind of starting with just like mindfulness, being present in the moment, right? For a lot of these guys, the awareness, right, of that inner critic, right, kind of that observing self, all that piece, that is completely new territory for a 14-year-old. So, you know, it's not like we're cracking the atom here, but they definitely are open to it because, you know, if you have a lack of confidence and it's leading to you just kind of like sitting in a hole, giving them a tool, right, like an awareness, like, hey, this is what we think is going on here, kind of opening their eyes to it. That's like the first step, just kind of engaging them to see if they'll kind of go down that road. And, you know, not surprisingly, they do take to it, which I've been very, I'm not shocked by it, but, you know, when you're 14, you're kind of all over the place a bit. But these guys really do respond to it.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's great. I know at that age, teenagers all so concerned about what other people think of them and looking good and peer pressure and all that. It's important to, yeah, it, what you're doing, the kind of work you're doing, Dave, and all of us can really help to make a huge difference, I think, in the, you know, not only their confidence, but just in sports, but of course in life and just how they're interacting with people. So, yes, it's really, really important to address all of that. So, yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit first about what is imposter syndrome. I just review a little bit about last time, how we talked and then talk about some things that we can do with that. So imposter syndrome is basically just the overwhelming feeling that you don't deserve your success and that it convinces you that you're maybe not as talented as you might seem or not as intelligent or don't have what it takes. And you might have a suspicion that your achievements are just down to good luck or good timing or being in the right place at the right time. And oftentimes there's a fear that, you know, at some point you'd be exposed as a fraud or as somebody who doesn't know what they're really doing. And we've probably all been in that situation at some point, just feeling like we're not as capable as somebody going to notice. You know, it happens, of course, when you enter a new job of some sort or if you got a promotion or for athletes, if you're all of a sudden in a new situation where there's more competition. I know that happens with athletes, say, from high school that, or maybe if they're in junior high and they advance to high school or high school to college and they were a big fish in a small pond and all of a sudden everybody's a big fish and you're not getting the attention or the notoriety that you used to. So it's often imposter syndrome is linked to feelings of self-doubt and fear of success or fear of failure. Self-sabotaging your experience and, you know, if you're successful, then doing something to counteract that. And it's not simply it's like low self-confidence, but perhaps more than that. It's a constant fear of exposure or isolation or rejection. And boy, you know, like Dave, the things that you described really fit that picture. And I know I've had many, I've been working with athletes for the last 30 years, and they often have those, especially high school kids, just are not really confident. And these days, with the phones, people are on their phones so much, they lack the actual social experience of being able to look people in the eye and have a conversation. And it's really important to teach that. And so, as I mentioned, imposter syndrome often strikes at a moment of success or moving up a little bit, starting taking on that extra responsibility. It could be within a team, like if your track folks are suddenly one guy is named captain of the team or you're the anchor on the relay team. You know, it's a new job, a new experience, and there's more expectation there. And so, and then also just starting your own business for adults could be receiving an award or promotion, all those things. You can get that feeling of imposter syndrome. I'm working with a client right now who's a doctor and who's very competent in one area, a dermatologist, and is huge years and years of experience in that field, but then he goes out and plays golf and feels like has that imposter syndrome and suddenly feels like he's not capable or hit a great shot and then hit a terrible shot and get really angry at himself. And these feelings can inspire you to work harder so that you can lead to further success. And recognition and feeling, but sometimes you feel like if you have more success, then you could feel like an even bigger fraud, or they can lead to kind of fading, downshifting, not wanting to be in the limelight, where you're exposed, and sometimes athletes, I think, unconsciously get injured or get sick so that they don't have to perform or don't have to be in the real race. So that can happen too. And so sometimes people revise their goals so they're less ambitious. And so I think it's good to ask yourself, different questions. Ask your athletes questions about inadequacy and self-doubt, and those are good ways to think about assessing. Also, perfectionistic tendencies is one area to assess with. In evaluating athletes, they oftentimes set unreasonably high goals and feel shame or disappointment when they fail or don't meet those expectations and are rarely satisfied with their achievements. And golfers are like that. They just rarely are satisfied and always looking to the next goal. But prefer to focus on the mistakes and the failures, the bad shot or the bad race that we had. That kind of comes into the focus of of our wins rather than the good things. And so one thing that you can do to work with them is help them to really enjoy the successes that they have had. And then you want to assess things like fearing judgment or fearing being looked at, fearing that somebody's going to discover them in a bad way. And so that is something to look at. That's these people with imposter syndrome are haunted by the fear they're not good enough, but also that they're other people are sure to find that out. And when you think about it, we're all really at some level of imposter syndrome. We're all working on ourselves, and we're all, not as good as we'd like to be. Everybody's has some of that. It's just a matter of how you manage it. And with imposter syndrome, it can lead to illogical extremes, and so you push yourself to the limit to, you know, prevent that exposure there. And so, you know, it can lead to damaging your self-esteem. And and then one thing to really look at too, another characteristic of this is not wanting to own your own success. And that's one thing that you can really help with as a coach, is to help athletes to own their own success. And often they'll use, you know, negative self-talk to convince themselves they don't really, you know, that wasn't really me that did that, or it was just luck. And so this self-talk, it provides kind of a rational support for irrational ideas. And so, you know, it's something that you can really work on with athletes to own your own success. Yeah, can I check in with you, Dave? What do you think about those thoughts? Have you experienced those either in yourself as an athlete or with your athletes too?
Yeah, I would say it kind of prompted me to think about, like, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, how we kind of attack, you know, faulty beliefs. And if we really explore, like, okay, so you have this thought in your head that you're not good enough, right? So what would it mean if people were to discover, right, that you weren't good enough, right? And what would that mean? And really sequence it out, take it down to its, like, core level, right? Does that make you any less of an athlete, right? Does it make your performance any less, right? If people were to discover this about you, what would it truly mean? And so, in other areas, and even for myself, right, just kind of exploring that, what would it mean? It's like, well, that's other people's beliefs, right? But that's not who you are as a person. It doesn't have to be, at least. Really kind of challenging it like that. I find that to be fairly effective just across the board, but really sequencing it out at the ground level, not just telling them, but actually going through that process.
Right. Yeah, kind of digging down deeper. What would that mean if you were feeling this way, and offer alternative ways of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it could be, the sort of negative thought traps that we talk about with, CBT. For those people on the call that might not know what that is, it's cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're working on your thoughts, your feelings, your behaviors. And so you can, think about the things that you can do there, it's just there's so many different ways, angles to look at with this, and also, maybe not going way back into a person's background, but often this syndrome comes from, parents or coaches who've had that. Who continually tell the athlete that they're not good enough, or it can be the product of coaches that are continually giving negative feedback. Have you noticed that, Dave, with athletes, that they've had coaches that are... go ahead.
Absolutely. We've got some parent coaches where they're actually coaching their child, which is always interesting, but you can see the messaging from the parent, like, just playing out in real time with the kid, and then the kid is starting to say similar things to themselves. And so, like, that's case in point, right? Like, that messaging is traveling. So if you've got an older athlete, somebody who's been in the game for a while, that messaging exists somewhere in their head. And, it's like, okay, had a rough day, rough performance, right? Kind of pull on that message. And I think a lot of the cases, there's just a lack of awareness for that message itself, where it came from, its importance. Because I see, especially in these younger guys, like, I can see it kind of, it's there, but it's mostly from the parenting perspective. But it starts to kind of seep into their performance, too. Because you'll see the kids say, all right, enough, Dad, enough, right? That kind of stuff. So that's very, in my mind, kind of symptomatic of that messaging playing out.
Right, exactly. And So sometimes I'll tell my athletes, I'm coaching you how to coach your father. that they need to, actually the child can teach their parents something, but often they're intimidated by the parents because the parents are paying the bills, of course, and the parents might be threatening them, if you don't perform well here, we're going to take you out of the game or not let you play anymore. And so they've got that fear going on too. I might have mentioned before, a 14-year-old golfer whose father would follow her on the course and then send her text messages along the way when she'd hit a bad shot, and text would say, you're not trying hard enough, or you should be taking more practice swings, or you don't care enough. Those kind of really difficult text message in the middle of a tournament. Can you imagine having to deal with that? And not trying hard enough, not caring, which, no one else really knows that. That's something, and so you can talk to the athlete about how you need to own your own performance, and someone else can't tell you that. And so what I did with her was just suggest, can you turn off your phone during the tournament, during the game? They're not supposed to be looking anyway. And she just would have it in her pocket and could feel the vibration there. And she knew after a bad shot, oh, that's a text from my dad. It was almost like an electric shock feeling on her leg, in her pocket, knowing that that was there. And I said, can you, how about just powering down your phone during the game? And she thought, oh, I never thought of that. And it was such a freeing experience for her. She was worried that her father would get upset, but I said, tell him that I said that was part of your coaching here, that you need to, I said it was okay to do that. And so she gave her permission to be able to just have her own tournament without the father interrupting. And just a simple technology change like that made a huge difference, where she felt free to be able to just have the game and realize, golf is something that is an up and down game, and after you hit a bad shot, then, we work on I call it an after the shot routine, and or freeing your mind or taking a swing the correct way. And then just being able to move on. So she did that and made a big, huge difference. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Parents talk or coaches trying to over-coach their kids, sort of live through their kids. So some of the questions you can ask if you think an athlete might have imposter syndrome, you could ask them, do you agonize over even the smallest mistake or flaws in your work or in your sport? It's a good question to ask. Or do you attribute your success to luck or outside factors, or do you attribute it to your own abilities? And you can ask, are you very sensitive to even slight criticism? So you can ask that. And then you could ask another thing, do you feel like you will inevitably be found out as a fraud or as a phony or as someone who isn't as good as you think? Another good evaluation question I thought of is, do you discount your experience even in areas where you're genuinely more skilled than others, downplay your expertise? And often this happens with women as well as guys. They're taught to, not own their own achievements. So it's important to you can ask those kind of questions as a good assessment. And then if they do find themselves feeling like a fraud or imposter, it might be helpful to talk with someone like you, a performing edge coach, coaching professional, talk about the negative thinking, self-doubt, the self-sabotage that often characterize this imposter syndrome, and it can have an effect on many areas of your life. And then, like with the CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy types of questions, you can ask, what core beliefs do I hold about myself? You know, just that's a really good question to get at the deeper issues. What core beliefs do I hold about myself? Am I a good person, a good athlete? Do I care about success? It helps an athlete to talk more deeply about themselves. And then saying a good question for helping them with coping is, do I need to be perfect for others to approve of me? Or how perfect do I need to be? That's a good one to get at the perfectionistic part. And do I believe I'm worthy of gaining success? Like when I was doing the Hawaii Ironman triathlon for the first time, I thought that I could maybe compete at a top level, but I had no idea. That was my very first Ironman race, major triathlon like that, and I had no idea how I could do, but I was hoping I could do well, but in a way I had that imposter syndrome of thinking, what am I doing here with all these top athletes? Most of them, I was confident with the running part, but with the biking, but the swimming, I felt like a fraud, like I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any formal training as a I was never a competitive swimmer. That part, I was just adding to my other sports, and so I thought, we're going to have to swim 2.4 miles out in open water. And I just was, that's a long ways to swim. And it could be choppy water and just wasn't sure. So that was the fraud part of, or the imposter part of me. And I was able to complete the swim okay. And I was thinking, okay, if I could just get through the swim, then I can get onto the bike and feel more confident. So I used the other parts of how I did feel good in the other sports. I used that hope kind of to carry me on. And I started out in, I was way back in the swim and I came up a bit in the bike, but after I got off the bike, it was, 19th place. And so I still had a long ways to go, but with visualizing I tried to visualize a time when I felt really good, when I performed well, and that was when I won the San Francisco Marathon 2 years earlier, and I put myself in that place, my mind, and was doing that. I was able to start feeling good and feeling strong, and so that was one way that you can work with your athletes is to have them visualize a time, a peak performance, or a time when they did perform well, or if they have trouble with that, just visualize a time when they were confident doing something. Everyone's had some time when they felt confident, maybe in a conversation with someone or doing a presentation at school or just something that they did well. And so when I visualized that with the San Francisco Marathon, it really brought feelings of strength and mental strength and physical strength, and I was able to cool down my body and visualizing running in the fog of Golden Gate Park. And with that visualization, the momentum kept building and building and moved up from 19th, and then I was 15th place, and then I was in 9th place, and then I was in 5th place, just kept passing other people. I didn't know what place I was in, but at the turnaround, I could see these women coming back. I could count the places and see that they were looking really tired. And I could see that I was in 5th place and then was able to move up to 3rd place and then finally passing Kathleen, the previous race winner, at passing the 2nd place person. And that's when ABC Wide World Sports had cameras, helicopters on each of us lead women, so they were able to capture that. And so it really all of a sudden, then I've got a second kind of imposter syndrome of thinking, what am I doing way up here in 2nd place in this world championship race? And this is my very first Ironman. I don't know how to be in second place. I don't know how to have all this this world championship experience and all this when ABC Wide World Sports is covering it by helicopter and all this attention there. It's like really exposing me. If I mess up now, I'll really be a fraud. And I was so tired. But I could see that other women were even more tired. Kathleen was walking in the race at that point when I passed her. So they were really, I thought, well, at least I'm not as bad off as some of these other athletes. So I was able to move through and get in and finish in second place, and which was enough to, you know, help me to become a professional athlete. And so I guess the lesson from that is to be able to draw on what strengths you do have and remember back. You can visualize the time when you were at your best, or visualize just be in, like Dave, as you were saying, be in the moment and be able to just be there and realize, okay, this is just and for a little while you can take that, the grandiosity out of the experience and just say, just do what you do best. You know, I'm a runner. I know how to run. Just be out here and do what I can do in this race. Be here now. Be in the moment, that present focus. So that was just an experience I wanted to share. And so now I wanted to talk about some of the things that you can do to help athletes move past these feelings. One is, of course, share your feelings, like we were talking about here. You know, be able to talk to other people about how you're feeling and those irrational beliefs, how they tend to come up. And because they fester, they get worse if you're not talking about them. So have those athletes share those with you. Another thing you can do is do a strengths assessment. Like I have athletes or have people, you know, write down or talk to you about what they do well, what their achievements are, what makes them a good athlete, what attracted them to the sport initially. That really helps to be able to, excuse me, I had to sneeze, to be able to realize that, you know, they're, maybe they don't feel good at the moment, but there's times when they felt really good and strong about what they're about their sport. And so do that, and it can be a continual process, not just a one-time thing. But add to the strengths assessment, like just adding today I ran a good set of 440s, or I was able to improve in the middle, or keep my form, or those kind of things can be on the strengths assessment too. And then just saying, you know, taking small steps, chunking it down, taking baby steps, not focusing on doing things perfectly, but rather doing things reasonably well, and then reward yourself for each of those actions. So each time you do have a good workout, or even a part of a good workout, you know, being able to say, you know, like tennis players, when they do a good shot, you'll see them walk back from the net and maybe make a fist and say, yes. You know, just that's a good way, a simple way to reinforce yourself. You do something physical, but like making a fist or whatever gesture you want, and then saying something to yourself like, yes, or I did it, or good job. Something simple like that can really make a huge difference to reinforce that in yourself. Because what we're usually doing is thinking about the mistakes. We replay that over and over in our minds, and the body follows those mental instructions. We're reinforcing the bad thing or the mistake. But if you can really turn that around and reinforce in your mind, the good things, what you're doing is, you know, that term neuroplasticity we hear these days, meaning that the brain can change and we can, you know, change the neural pathways in our minds so that you can reinforce the good moves that you make and make those stronger in your mind, in your brain. So that's good too. to have people do, to reinforce the good stuff and take baby steps, take chunks. Just look at one thing at a time. One phrase I use like that, have athletes use a lot, is just this. Say to yourself, just this, and then fill in the blank, so that you just stay with that one small thing that your mind can think of. So if it's a tennis player, it could be just this serve. If it's a runner, it could be just this interval, just this mile, just this step, just this turn on the track. Dave, what's your sport that you specialize in? Is it javelin?
So javelin, and I'm a runner. I was a sprinter through high school and college. And I was a football player, and then in my early years, I traveled through the world playing soccer. So a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah. So with those sports, you could, with that phrase, just this, how could you fill in the blank there? Just this one thing that you want to focus on? Like with the javelin, just this jump or something? Or just this throw?
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was the question? I'm sorry.
I just use this phrase, to focus on one thing at a time. Use the phrase, just this, and then you fill in the blank. Like just this throw, just this moment, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just so that you can fill in the blank or have your athletes fill in the blank with that. Just this and whatever it is that they're focusing on that moment. With soccer, maybe just this kick, or with golf, just this shot, just this swing, that kind of thing. So, so that's one technique to use to stay with that one thing that they're doing, to chunk it down. And then another really important thing to have them do is to stop comparing. I think every time you compare yourself to others in a social situation, you find some fault with yourself. It fuels that feeling of not being good enough or not belonging or not deserving your success. Instead, during conversations, you want to focus on, say, listening to what the other person is saying and be genuinely interested in learning more about what they're saying. Or it's okay to compliment other people and say, "Yeah, that was a good workout or a good thing that you did." But be able to say in your own mind, you don't want to brag to them, but be able to say in your own mind, "Here's what I'm good at," or "Here's what I feel good about," that kind of thing to yourself, so that you. Basically, if you want to compare, it's best to just compare yourself with your own, improve within your own self rather than other people. And so one thing is with that is to encourage people to only use social media moderately. Most kids these days are on social media all the time. And of course, we know that Facebook and these Instagram are places where people just brag a lot. Basically, it's and they only show the good stuff. You rarely read anything about that someone's having a problem or having difficulties being motivated, or that they feel badly about something. Those things you don't see on the. In social media, but those things are all happening too. There's always more to the story. So have people put limits on what they can do socially. I have one athlete working with, and he was really having trouble in school and just with his own imposter syndrome by just being on the phone way too much and not going to bed till 4 in the morning and having a difficult time. And so the first thing we did was have him put just take all the social media apps off his phone, so he's not even tempted to look at them there. If he wants to do that, he can do that on his computer, which is not as accessible, or it's not with him all the time. So that was one thing. And then he also has an app on there that talks about, it shows him how much time he's on the phone. And so each week he would say it was down by 10% or 15% from the week before. So his usage of the phone went down. And as he was doing that and not looking at social media, his confidence actually went up proportionately. So it's amazing. So they stopped that comparing kind of thing that is going on. And so he was able to focus more on his own performance and just feeling good inside. And also most of the social media is geared around, all the algorithms are around outrage. They want to, if you're looking at news feeds and that kind of thing, they want to show you the worst possible thing or things that make people angry or upset. And so that is all interfering with, your self-esteem. So if you can encourage athletes to use social media just moderately and stop comparing with other people, if you and just maybe if you do a logbook, just compare with yourself is the best thing, or just not to compare but to just look at improvements. And then I think another thing to do is to just keep, no matter how much you feel like you don't belong, if you don't belong in that sport or don't belong with those people, don't let that stop you from pursuing your goals, to keep going, and to not quit, but just to keep going one day at a time, I think is really important, to just make that commitment to keep working on your own self, and that it's going to bring you success, and it will help you in fitness, in your overall fitness. If you are with focusing on others, it's good to, I think, try to help others in the same situation as you. You know, athletes can find, if you see someone that feels awkward or alone, ask the person, you know, bring them into the group or into the conversation. So that can really help you get out of your own feelings of being awkward, and is to help other people in some way. Ask a person a question, bring them into the conversation. And as you practice those skills, you know, you build your own confidence and your own abilities. So, and some other things that I just wanted to mention with regard to, you know, some techniques that I use with athletes is being able to, you know, look at just simple techniques like deep breathing can really help a lot. As you breathe, you know, breathing can help you slow down your thoughts. And as you breathe in, say something, breathe in a quality that you do want. Say, breathe in confidence. Just say, I'm breathing in, I'm feeling good. And then as you breathe out, just breathe out and let go. You don't have to say, I'm breathing out something, letting go of something negative. Or you can just say, I'm letting go of thoughts, or something that is something that you want to let go of. You can do what I call ocean breathing. Imagine the waves as you come in, the waves coming in and bringing in those qualities you do want, feeling good, feeling confident, feeling strong inside. And then as you breathe out, just breathe out. Imagine the wave is going out and just taking, carrying away all any frustrations or unwanted thoughts or feelings. So that's a good one to... your breathing can really help that way. So you can say, breathing in strength, breathing out the stress, breathing out letting go, breathing out tension. And then you can say to yourself, nervousness is your friend. Nervousness is my friend. Just accept the fact that you're going to be nervous, maybe not as confident as you want, especially before an important event, a race or something. You can make this feeling your ally rather than fighting it. So, in fact, nervousness can be a good sign that you're excited and ready to roll. So you kind of get used to being nervous, and that's okay. Say to yourself, another time when I felt nervous like this, I did well. It's important to distinguish between being worried and being psyched and ready for a challenge of a competition. Let's say you're going to do a running race. You can tell yourself this feeling is directly connected to doing my best. The more I feel this way, the better I'll perform. And once the gun goes off and I get moving with the race, then the nervousness will subside. So just relax and enjoy the ride. So, kind of let nervousness be your ally, your friend, and let it carry you, let it fuel your performance. And then remind yourself that you are well prepared. Think back on all the great workouts that you completed to prepare for this race. That's another really important technique, because our minds are saying, I'm not prepared, I'm not ready for this, or there's too many other good people here, I'm going to get wiped out. All of that is going on, and so you want to just think back on, even if you've had one good workout or one part of a good workout where you felt good, just think about that and look over your logbook. Beforehand, if you have a logbook or the logbook in your mind, and just think about the good times that you have had. It could be just running on a trail somewhere and feeling good, remembering how dedicated you've been and how far you've come. Tell yourself, I'm well trained, I'm rested, I'm ready to go. And then one other technique I like to think of is just mentally rehearsing or visualizing the event in your mind. Of course, you want to see yourself doing it right. We usually see ourselves messing up or saying to yourself, don't mess up, don't look stupid, don't look don't do what you did last time. But you want to see yourself doing it well, so play that new movie in your mind. Go over in your mind exactly how you'd like to do your race. And if you can, scenarios, not just doing the race perfectly or the game perfectly, but if you see yourself mentally prepared to respond to anything, to the situation behind. Be somebody else and be able to stay with them, stay with your competition, or you might visualize yourself ahead in the race and the people chasing you. I remember I did that in one race recently myself. I'm still running and racing. I belong to an all-women's racing team, and some of the women that usually beat me, I was able to pass them in the middle of the race, and they were right behind me, and I had to keep saying to myself, okay, they're right behind me. Stay, keep your pace. They're right behind, they're ready to pass me. So, I need to keep strong, keep going. And I was able to just barely stay ahead of them the whole time. But that was a motivator rather than a fear. It was something that kept me going. So those are some ideas there. I've got lots more to share, but let me check in. Dave, what are some thoughts that you might have about what was helpful for you or questions that you might have?
I just think that, kind of staying with that present focus, especially with the throwers that I've got now, just kind of watching them, there's just a big emphasis of just go out and throw versus kind of slowing it down. Staying out of your head, don't be so anxious, that kind of piece. So I think there's just a lot to be done, especially with these younger guys, to just be made aware that, sports psychology can help them. I think that's, we can't take for granted what they do and don't know. We really have to check in with them That's the one thing I'm finding to be very true, because just because I know it, most of us know it, doesn't mean that kid knows it. So we have to really kind of check it.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to check in with each person. And I know being able to check in with your feelings, your thoughts, and kind of rate yourself where you're at. And yeah, but you can really, you can change that, you know, if you're feeling low, if you're feeling too ramped up, too amped up, you can, take some deep breaths and slow yourself down. If you're feeling not motivated, you can do some jumping jacks or do something to increase your energy level. So you can do all that, and you can, I think, you know, it's good to, you know, you can have, one way to check in is to keep a log of your stress responses, to kind of generate a chart with, you know, noticing, okay, what's my, for work, a stress response or my imposter response, say before, during workouts, during pre-competition, during a competition, afterward, you know, keep a little logbook, not of your times. I mean, that's one thing, but also of your thoughts and your feelings. And so on the left side of a page, write stress response, and then you could list the ways that you personally respond to a situation, a workout or event, both mentally and physically. So you might list some things like butterflies in the stomach or muscle twitches or rapid breathing or racing heart rate or dry mouth or sense of confusion, or, you know, it could be lack of focus, difficulty making decisions, forgetting details, or irritability. All those kind of things might be going on, just the imposter syndrome, feeling like I'm not good enough, all those kind of things. It's just good. You can rate them, or you don't want to highlight everything, but just notice it and then be able to say, okay, now I can fine-tune my energy and to achieve my ideal performance here. And then the excitement that I experience can be viewed as a positive, powerful thing. So, that's good. And I think it's something that, we can always work on. And,
Another question.
Oh, sure.
So I have a young man, he's 14, and he was talking about his aspiration to be he goes, maybe next year I could be the second string quarterback. And, you know, it's like his confidence is pretty low, but he's like, maybe that would work out. It's just like, you know, like, I have to make sure I don't substitute my, you know, first string mentality, right, for what he's aspiring to be. But, you know, I'm just curious, like, if you've got a young man who's clearly got the capability to be first string, but, you know, this kind of falls in line with maybe a little with the imposter syndrome, like, before it's even happened, he's already shooting for second string or just to be on the team, but he's clearly capable of starting. Like, how would what would be the best way to address that, like, kind of from the get-go? Where would you start?
Yeah, that's a good question, Dave. So, if you have, just to repeat the question for make sure everybody heard, if you got a quarterback that thinks they can maybe make second string, and you think that they can make the first string or that they could achieve higher, you could ask there's different. He might only see second string as the only possibility. Ask where that comes from, because maybe his father's told him that, or a coach, or you'll only make it to second string kind of thing. He might not even see that there's other possibilities, but find out where it comes from, and then you could just have him talk about that, or say, is there well, why don't we open, you know, be open to possibilities? What possibilities are there? And see, you know, this first string or second string, and he might say, oh, no, I could never make first string. And but you could ask, what would that be like if you were open to that possibility? You know, you might be able to be the first string, or you could ask, you know, what makes you a good athlete, and what makes you kind of the strengths assessment. Ask what abilities do you have, and let's list them here. List what you've achieved so far, and not only your achievements, but let's talk about your work ethic and your sense of self-discipline, and your what's your motivation like, and your things that you that make you a strong athlete that got you to where you are now, and be able to have him list those things and talk about the things that make him a strong athlete. And as he's doing that, he might, you know, himself spontaneously open up to the possibility of, yeah, maybe I could be a first string quarterback, or maybe I could be maybe that would allow me to get up there. Because probably, oftentimes, people in that first string position, they might have some good ability, but they might not have those qualities that he has of motivation and self-discipline and strong work ethic. Because oftentimes I think the work ethic and the mental strength, those things are much more important than talent. Usually people think of, you know, I got to have this God-given talent or just an innate ability that you either have it or you don't have it. But I think if you can open him up to the possibility that there is if you can strengthen your mind and strengthen your confidence in yourself, then that's going to allow you to bring out all the talent that you have and the abilities inside. So I guess good questioning, line of questioning, which sounds like you know how to do, Dave, opening him up to the possibilities, to not be just stuck on what somebody else has said. It's probably, you know, a coach or a parent or something inside his head that's limiting him there. But what if, I know right before I did the Hawaii Ironman triathlon, a friend said to me, well, don't get your hopes up too high. You know, you probably won't get in the top 10 or top tier at all. And I thought, well, how do they know? I think I was able to, you know, do much better than this person thought. So there's so much more that you that's out there if you're just open to those possibilities. So I guess, questioning and then giving the what if kind of questions, you know. What if there was an opening for that? What if there, you know, oftentimes the first, you know, things happen. The first string guy it gets injured, or there might be an opening there where you can come in, and you need to be, it's best to be ready. If you're ready for that position and there's an opening, why not? It's a great opportunity to go for it. You know, those kind of things, giving that sense of openness and curiosity about what could the possibilities there, just opening his mind to that would be a great way to, I think, get him to think differently, or think in terms of things that he could achieve, because that's going to help. That line of thinking can also help with jobs down the road and school and everything else that he does, relationships, all of that too. Does that kind of make sense, Dave? Or is that helpful?
Yeah. That's very helpful.
Yeah, so, that's great. Okay, and I think just being able to say it's giving him the potential Yeah, it's almost like a legal argument. Make a legal argument for why you can. So he's got the argument for why he won't be able to make the first strain, but you can the first string. But you can say let's if we were to argue the other way that you could make it. What would you say to yourself? What's a way to be able to imagine? You know, imagine is a good word too. Imagine yourself in that first string. What would that be like? He's probably never been able to picture himself there. Just imagining that, it kind of brings that excitement out there. And, there's nervousness there and feeling like, oh, what if I mess up? But there's always those thoughts. But those can be worked with, and you can overcome those. And it's going to be okay to give it a try. If you say no, then the answer is always no. But if you can, but there may be a possibility there that allowing for him to open his mind a little bit. And I think that it's a great question, Dave. Thanks for asking that. And I think it's a question that we can all work with all of our athletes. For other people on the call, June and John in Omaha, June's in Texas, and Anna L. in France, and working with basketball players or soccer players there, and Val, who's in Washington State, who's working with her basketball, who's been a professional basketball player. We've got so much talent on this call. Of people that you can work with these same kinds of things of just giving your athletes that open, a sense of openness and that they can build confidence too. Just even a small success experience can really build your confidence. That maybe there's more possibility here than I imagined. So, great. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, Dave and everyone. Appreciate it. And, we'll talk. Any other questions or any comments? What was helpful for you, Dave? If you're still there.
Yeah, just a lot to think about. I like the kind of the ground level application of what we talked about today, like getting specific, really, because when I'm working with these young guys, they're just in such need of it, but they're not necessarily going to ask for it. So. Just to kind of be ready when they're ready to take it on too. That today's call will help with that.
They're not necessarily what did you say?
They're not always asking for what I have to offer because in the coaching aspect, when I'm out there working with them hands on, they're not always going to ask for the sports psychology piece. But gosh, when you can slow it down for a kid and he takes on a skill like even the just take a couple deep breaths through the nose, breathe it out. Tandem that with the message that you're going to say, what you're going to say to yourself, that can be really helpful to a kid in the moment. But they're not always going to ask for it. So just being there at the right time to give it to them, I think makes a difference.
Yeah, great. You're in a great position, Dave, to be able to work with them with the physical part of the sport and the mental part too.
Yeah.
And just giving them that tip, those little things can make a huge difference. Yeah. So, well, great conversation with you and all of you, and then we'll have our next call on the fourth Thursday of the month, be February the 25th. So that sounds great, and I think there's one of our coaches, Val, we asked some questions about marketing questions, so I'll address that next time, too. And just how to get the word out there about what you're doing, what all of you are doing, and how to build your business. So, great. All right. Well, thanks so much. Have a great day. It's always such an honor to work with you. And we'll talk to you. Have a good week. Have a good Valentine's Day. And happy Valentine's Day. We'll talk to you next time. And I'll have this replay out shortly for you as well. Okay, thanks. And have a great day. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye now.